Happy Monday, everybody. It's time for Baseball Barbacast. I'm Jordan, and the voice you're about to hear is not as strong as it once was. Jake Mintz was at a wedding on Sunday night, and he's going through it today. He's not hungover, but the voice is not doing great. Jake, how are you?
Day to day with inflammation.
All right. We have a lot of baseball to talk about. We'll see how much talking Jake does on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that can't talk. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Woo!
All right, there he is, folks. It's Jake Mintz on a Monday morning. No, it is not a bit, though we are sometimes known for those. You've heard Jake use a variety of different voices on this here podcast, but have you heard him use the no voice? Because that's what you might be getting some of today. It is Monday. It is June 10th. We have a weekend recap to do. Jake will be contributing as much as he can. Would you like to explain your situation as best you can, my dear friend?
On Saturday night, I was at Yankee Stadium screaming, "We want Soto," as loud as I possibly could while Trent Grisham was hitting. And my passion and love for the New York Yankees just took over my body. And here I am, right out.
Good start, because you just said Saturday night. And if you were doing that on Saturday night, you would have sounded really weird. But on Sunday night, that you would have been a part of the party. We are, of course, going to talk about Trent Grisham's heroic home run, his third home run and fifth hit of the season. So we are, of course, going to begin with Dodgers Yankees. Before we get into the baseball, listen, we hope everyone can be patient with us today, patient with Jake today. You were indeed at a wedding for one of your close friends. Our close friends. I was not at the wedding, which is fine. No hard feelings. But I understand that is an activity where sometimes loud noises are being made not related to baseball.
Yeah, and to be very clear, I am not bleary-eyed this morning.
No, you seem very coherent. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Like I woke up early. I contributed to the running, write the document, watched a lot of highlights.
Yep.
And then I went downstairs to get coffee. Mm-hmm. And by Jove, no voice. We're going to fight through it.
Yeah.
Like a pitcher. You remember when Tanaka had a torn UCL like the whole freaking time? That's me with the vocal cord. Juan Soto is day to day with forearm inflammation. I'm day to day with not talking at all.
Yes. And so we will see, obviously, a storyline to watch for this podcast as we progress throughout the week and return here on Wednesday. But we are going to begin. I know normally we begin with the sweeps and then so and so on. We didn't have any sweeps. Now, the Orioles did go undefeated. We'll get to them, but they have a mop opportunity on Monday. They did not officially complete their series mop or series sweep, whatever you would like to call it. So we will begin with the biggest series of the weekend, the one that you were, I assume, most closely following, especially since you were in attendance on Friday night. Let us begin with Dodgers-Yankees. Dodgers taking the first two of the series before the Yankees. It was close. They were sweating out, but some heroics from Trent Grisham. Aaron Judge's 24th home run on Sunday salvages a Sunday game. And I will say, as far as series goes, where you immediately lose one of the best players in it right before it, it was pretty exciting. I would say this delivered on the hype for a lot of reasons. Of course, I saw the Dodgers look like absolute crap in Pittsburgh last week, but they sure showed some real life on Friday. Let's start with that Friday game and what you saw.
Well, I think we need to give this series a little bit of context. Yes, two biggest teams. They're the two biggest draws in the sport. They're the clubs people care the most about. But what I didn't fully appreciate until I sat down and watched the game on Friday is how rare it is, or it has been, for these two teams to play. The Dodgers, who obviously weren't born in Brooklyn ever, have only traveled to the Bronx for a regular season game three times before this, right? This was the fourth instance ever, literally ever, of the Dodgers playing an interleague game in the Bronx. And so you have so many LA people in New York that care about the Dodgers, yeah. And then you have all the dudes who cared because like they're Brooklynites, which is like the best.
Yeah.
But there's like a rarity to this. There's a novelty to this. And so I think that I didn't fully appreciate it won't be a novelty moving forward with the new schedule. They'll have it every other year now. But the energy in the park on Friday, it felt like a World Series game. Like the amount of media in the room, a player on the Yankees pulled out his phone and took a picture of the locker room because there were so many media members in it.
Yeah.
Which is very funny.
Yeah.
Because if we ever pulled out our phone and took a picture of anything in the locker room, we would go to baseball jail.
Right. But it's a little bit different standards there. And yeah, I think that is a good way to kind of set the context, because while the Dodgers are kind of, particularly this year with Ohtani, a traveling circus in their own right, I have seen it over the last couple of weeks in much smaller contexts in Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, where you have that energy. Sure, it's amplified media and it's a little bit more crowded press box. And the fans, right, just the traveling fans, the number of Dodger fans that exist in every city, I have to imagine it was times a billion in New York. And on Friday, I mean, we got a game that felt that lived up to those stakes.
But it's not just times a billion in New York, because the Dodgers were at Citi Field to play the Mets 2 weeks ago, and it did not have the zip
not
at all.
Close.
It really didn't. Yep. Sorry, Steve Cohen. It just didn't feel this. Taking the 4 train versus taking the 7 train. There's a difference to it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know,
and we've seen the Dodgers, you know, at Citi Field every year, right? So
every year.
That doesn't feel as special.
But the atmosphere was sick. It was awesome. I was bummed I couldn't go to all three of these. All three national games, right? Yeah. Apple TV, Fox on Saturday.
Yeah, the Holy Trinity.
The Holy Trinity, right? You know,
Roku got screwed. If only Roku could snag like a Sunday doubleheader where they could have, I'm sure they would have paid a lot of money for that. But yeah, no, I mean, that's what you would expect for a series of like this. And even though the Dodgers were not, again, they weren't feeling awesome coming into it, we come out of it, I think, still feeling pretty excited about the prospect of these teams, you know, maybe playing again in October, even though a lot of people would roll their eyes at it.
I'm very torn on it.
Yeah.
Because it'd be great for business. Let me tell you, you know, the Dodgers and the Yankees drive interest. They drive numbers. They drive clicks. They drive listens. They drive buzz like they do. Mm-hmm. However, the prospect of having to cover these two relatively uncoverable franchises is incredibly overwhelming.
Less fun.
So I think I'd prefer less fun. I think I'd prefer just one.
Hey,
but that's not a perspective of you people.
No, and a problem for another day. Let's enjoy the baseball from this weekend. Yeah.
So my favorite thing about this whole series is it's all this hype, all this anticipation, and on Friday night we get Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who spurned the Yankees. Brian Cashman went to Japan, saw his no-hitter. They reserved his number. All of that against Cody Potee for the New York Yankees, making a spot start. Clark Schmidt on the shelf. Gerrit Cole's not back yet, so they need an arm to fill in that fifth spot. Mm-hmm. And they have this guy, Cody Potee, who they signed for $750,000 in the offseason, fourth-round pick. Way back when at UCLA, has like a, I think it was his 11th or 12th big league start. Mm-hmm. Friday night against the freaking Dodgers, and Cody Potee goes 4 2/3 scoreless. It was amazing. I think I once wrote that former Oriole and Yankee Asher Wojciechowski was like watching someone pitch on a tightrope walking between two buildings that you're just trying not to fall. And Cody Potee, what a performance. More impressive than Yamamoto. Oh, Yamamoto goes 7 strong. He doesn't allow a run. I freaking hope so. Have you seen that guy pitch? Cody Poteet's throwing 92.
Yeah, well, Potee, he did max at 95. He did throw a wonderful balance of 5 different pitches. But yes, you know, he only had 1 strikeout. And it was a great, great contrast. This journeyman, you know, on the minimum. Against the highest paid pitcher of all time. And I agree, Potee deserves his flowers 100%. However, this was the best we have seen of Mr. Yamamoto. Not just the 7 scoreless, the line is good, you know, two hits, seven innings, seven strikeouts, two walks. It looked, this is what you were paying for. I mean, the velo was up. He threw the 20 hardest pitches of his season. Everything was working. And that fastball in particular that we were all so excited about, because sure, he wasn't throwing 100, you know, but it was everything about it, everything about the movement characteristics and the ride at the top of the zone combined with the velocity. We finally saw it. It was fully on display in this game, and he was just outstanding. It was just everything you could have hoped to see from him. And while he's not going to do that every time out, that looked like one of the best pitchers on earth. And we've seen he's been very good for the last month or so, but he has not looked like one of the best pitchers on earth. That looked like one of the best pitchers on earth.
So this game is 0-0, and it's creeping towards the end. No one's scoring. And the whole shtick starts to be about who's not on the field. And that's Juan Soto. Juan Soto, who was taken out of game on Thursday with some discomfort in his forearm. They did some testing Friday afternoon, revealed that he's day-to-day, no structural issues, and he is likely to be back relatively soon. However, Aaron Boone was very, you know, deceptive pregame about whether Soto would be available. And I had my binoculars from the press box. I'm just peeping, like, is Soto moving? Is he going up and down? Is he sweating? And it ends up, he does not get in the game.
He was holding a bat in full uniform. I don't know if he had a helmet on, but he was definitely late in the game. There was a point where he was holding the bat, which was very different, by the way, just fast forwarding. Like Sunday night, and I think Saturday, he was not even wearing like a jersey. Like it was like clearly unavailable. But, you know, a little bit of back and forth, you know, Dave Roberts says afterwards, like, yeah, I knew he wasn't coming into the game. Anyway, we go scoreless into extra innings. Were there any other individual moments? I mean, again, it's there's barely any hits. There's no extra base hits, obviously. Teoscar Hernandez delivers the go-ahead RBI double. The start of what turned out to be the weekend of Teoscar. What an incredible showing from Teo. And that is again, ends up being the biggest story for the Dodgers besides Yamamoto. But in this game, the Dodgers ultimately hold on while the Yankees do put up another run. Johan Ramirez earns his first save of the season. I don't know what the analogy is for what it is to watch Johan Ramirez pitch, but he has been stunningly effective, at least until one of the worst pitch calls of all time on Sunday against Aaron Judge. But on Friday, he gets the job done, and the Dodgers take the first game.
One other fun reliever-related moment from that game. So Cody Poteet, I know I'm on Poteet watch. I'm sorry. I'm hooked.
That's fine.
It's the fifth inning. The Dodgers have risen first and second, and Ohtani's coming. And it's like, you got to go get Poteet. You can't have Poteet face Ohtani the third time with two guys on. So they go out and they get him, and they bring in Victor Gonzalez. Now, why is this significant? Victor Gonzalez is who the player the Dodgers traded away, got rid of, to clear a space on their 40-man roster for Shohei Ohtani. So Victor Gonzalez, who had been with the Dodgers for a long
time. Oh, yeah.
Right.
One of the most important players in their 2020 World Series run.
He signed with the Dodgers as an international free agent on June 2nd, 2012. This is a player who spent 11 years as a Los Angeles Dodger. And, oh, what does that mean? Nothing. Because Shohei Ohtani was available, so they traded him away. They bring him in this huge spot to face Ohtani, and he gets him to ground out to end the inning. And Gonzalez, you just like see how, like, look at what he's doing. Like,
hold on. We'll get to the London series later. But I did have, it was great. And by the way, we have Caleb Ferguson pitching this game. We had Dennis Santana pitching this game. It was all kinds of fun former Dodgers. But anyway, that was Friday. It was tense. It was, obviously we had an 0-for-5 from Ohtani and 0-for-5. Stan looked terrible. And Rizzo, oh my gosh, Rizzo is a problem right now. But okay, anyway, all right, so let's move on to Saturday. Saturday's game is a little bit more straightforward. The Dodgers offense, which had just been real sleepy for the last few weeks. I know they put up a bunch of runs against Pittsburgh on Thursday, But they really kind of came to life, especially late in the game. We get two home runs from Teoscar Hernandez, including a grand slam off Tommy Canley. Gavin Stone is fine. Nestor Cortez is also fine. But really, the bullpen does not really get the job done. And the Dodgers kind of cruise in this one. Definitely the best we've seen from their offense in quite some time. And Teoscar Hernandez, of course, had the big hit on Friday. Is just kind of reminding everybody that, like, oh yeah, like the Dodgers also had, you know, $23 million lying around to give this guy for 1 year, and he has just been exactly what you could hope. He homers again on Sunday, which we'll get to in a second. He now takes the team lead. He's got 16 home runs, passing Otani on the team. And listen, he's going to strike out a lot. You're still going to see that, but he is everything that they could possibly hope for. And, you know, while it was, you know, frustrating to see him struggle to hit in Seattle as many hitters have before, this isn't that shocking, right? I mean, the home road splits would tell you that in a more comfortable environment, he would revert back to kind of the all-star level hitter that he had been in Toronto. And that's what he's been for the Dodgers. And that's just been huge as this top group has been going through relative struggles. Of course, we're talking about some of the best hitters on earth, but for them, they've been relatively cold. And for him to kind of do this in the middle of the order is so impressive.
Yeah, and the bottom of the lineup is bad. I mean, it's still a problem.
It's still a problem. Once they get Muncy back, we'll stop caring as much. But no, it's bad. And we saw some signs of life with Kike, and even Chris Taylor got a couple hits this weekend, I think. But Pa Hayes has had some moments. But no, they just need that middle bunch to be a little bit stronger, and Teoscar has been a huge part of that. So yeah, not much else to say on Saturday, but then on Sunday, this is a real fun. This was just an excellent baseball game. I've said many times here on this show, I really don't watch Sunday night baseball very often. This is like kind of usually when I take a break. It's like I watch a lot of ball over the weekend. I'm like, all right, I got reset. I know it's usually a classic game, but it's like, you know what? It's fine. This was not one I was going to miss. And this was a fantastic game. We got Glasnow against a true Cy Young contender, Luis Gil. Unbelievable. And they were both very good for the good early chunk of the game. We get an Oswaldo Cabrera home run. We get a Judge RBI double. And then we kind of settle into the middle innings. And Glasnow is just, he is really something to watch. First of all, he finally gets some run support. When they score in the fifth inning on Sunday, it is the first runs that the Dodgers have scored while Glasnow has been on the mound in five starts. It was the beginning of May that the Dodgers last scored with Tyler Glasnow on the mound. They finally get some run support when they tie the game in the fifth inning. They leave him out there because the stuff looks immaculate. The swings and misses are piling up like crazy. But ultimately, the Yankees prevail as we zoom into the sixth inning, Jake. For that moment you referred to earlier, Trent Grisham comes up with first and third, down by one out, I believe, and Glasnow still on the mound. And Trent Grisham is hitting 083, or might have even been lower than that when he came to the mound at that point. And on television, so you hear it on TV, we want Soto, we want Soto, the Yankees want Soto, who's not even in uniform, as you see, because the television broadcast pans to Soto, who essentially is like sheepishly laughing and like putting his head down, clearly acknowledging what is occurring, because the Dodgers or the Yankees fans would much rather see him hit in this, you know, runners in scoring position situation than Trent Grisham hitting 083. And instead, Tyler Glasnow lays a fastball in there, and Trent Grisham does not miss. And I will say this about Tyler Glasnow. He can give him up. He can give him up. He can really give him up. Now, it's rare because he is so good.
When he gives him up,
boy, do they go far. And this, I mean, again, this is what, in theory, Trent Grisham is there to do, is to not miss fastballs down the middle like this and hit big home runs. He's done it over the past few years, right? Like, that's the kind of, he's not a perfect hitter, but he can do this. And just an unbelievable moment, which we can kind of talk about more. Then anything else on this? Well, I want to talk about this moment, specifically the aftermath, but I could wrap up the rest of the game if that is most efficient.
I think this happens once a year, where Yankees fans chanting something becomes a story, and that's fun. I like that. I have no notes on that. I just want to give Trent Grisham a little grace.
Oh,
this guy was an everyday player for a long time, and the routine of of seeing live pitching is really important, you know, and for him to struggle offensively this year is not surprising, especially because it's not as if he was an elite hitter beforehand. I mean, he was a average to like below average hitter who was really good defensively and could pop you a homer. And we saw that. Like, that's what he gave the Yankees last night. How they've kind of shaped the roster with him moving forward, when Jason Dominguez is back, will be very interesting. But in this particular moment, it's easy to understand why Trent Grisham is struggling the way he struggled relative.
Yeah.
Good to see him have that moment.
Yep. And then Aaron Judge has his 24th home run of the year on just, I can't even begin to understand what the logic was behind throwing him the exact same sweeper in the exact same location after he fouled it off and saw it earlier in the at-bat from Johan Ramirez. But boy, did he crush this one. Aaron Judge is on pace for 58 home runs. That is very funny because remember when we did the season where he had the record-breaking homers and it was like, wow, well, once in a lifetime. He's like, oh, no, actually, I actually might just try to hit 60 home runs again now that I'm healthy and out of the early season funk that I was in relatively, because he is possibly the best player on earth. You could say he's the best player on earth. I was like, yeah, that's fine. That's fine with me. They kind of hold on late. Dodgers make it sort of interesting in the ninth, but ultimately Mookie Betts strikes out to end it for the Yankees to squeeze out a win there. And after the game, of course, everyone's asking all the Yankees about the we want Soto. And Aaron Judge delivers an excellent, just a great moment of Aaron Judge being the capital T, capital C, the captain. Basically being like, Grisham has been busting his ass. And I didn't appreciate that. I know we all want Soto up there, and he'll be back soon. But Trent Grisham is on our team, and we care about him. Quote, Grisham works his butt off every single day Soto is out right now. He's going to be back soon. He's been carrying this team all year. Anytime you go up against teams like this, fans pay to come see us do our thing. They want to see the best out there. Soto's going to heal up fine, but Grish is a heck of a ball player. He showed it tonight in a big moment when we needed him. I wasn't too happy with it, with the We Want Soto chance, but I think he made a good point. He got his point across with that homer. Amen, brother. Aaron Judge, the captain, everybody. It was cool. It's a cool moment for Grisham. And to your point, last bit on the Yankees here before we move on, because this is a lot of minutes about the series, not that it's not deserved. Jason Dominguez had four hits and a homer yesterday in AAA. He has been on fire since he started playing in the minors over the last couple weeks. And it sure seems like he's going to be ready soon. So this is going to be very interesting to see what happens with Trent Grisham. I guess he could go back to the bench and kind of stay in that role in some form. I haven't kind of looked at the roster as closely as you probably have. So maybe you have some insight there. But that's good news for them. And Gerrit Cole made his second rehab start as well yesterday in AA and got through it relatively fine. Did allow a home run to Ryan Ritter. Shouts out to Ryan Ritter, Rockies prospect, who I didn't think was going to be very good, but it appears to be actually pretty good. That's the Yankees update. Do you have any sense for... Yeah, we're going to presumably be seeing both of these guys back soon, and that will be an interesting roster, some interesting roster movement for them. Because Soto, it seems like, will be playing this week in Kansas City.
The Yankees have a problem, and I guess a solution. Like, the outfield has been so good, and the infield relatively has been so bad, besides Volpe. And so, in a perfect world, here's what you do. Hey, Alex Verdugo, learn first base for tomorrow. And then you send Anthony Rizzo to the farm upstate and you just roll Verdugo at first. But that's not how it works. And so the way that thought about constructing this roster in the offseason was that Stanton would get hurt, right? Which is totally fair to assume. He's been good relatively and not hurt. And so,
yeah, good enough. He's played.
He's played every day.
He's played. He's had 15 home runs every day. Yeah, he's got 76 strikeouts, but he's playing.
What's his OPS plus? It's like 111.
107. 107.
Yeah. Fine. Great.
Yeah. Stands
out the problem. So, how they fold Dominguez in, who clearly, it seems, needs to be hitting at regularly at the big league level with the way that the roster is, I have no idea what they do because, like, Judge has taken ground balls at first base before, but we can't just assume that he's going to, like, pull a Bryce Harper and just move over there in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
It, I don't.
And we know Juan Soto's not moving there. Even although that's interesting too. Could you spin the elbow soreness into, you know, more DH time for Soto? I mean,
yeah, but okay, great. More DH time for Soto than you stand.
So stand, yeah, yeah. I don't know. Again, we are heading to interesting times with the Yankees. Again, they're very good. They're still in first place. Massive series, 4 games set in Kansas City starting tonight. Very excited to watch that. All right. That was a lot of minutes on the most important series in baseball. That's what it deserves. Let's do 3 more series before we take a break, and then we are going to turbo just fly through the rest of the series. Let us begin with your Baltimore Orioles, Jake Mintz, who won all 3 games over the Tampa Bay Rays over the weekend. Not a sweep because they play again on Monday. Tonight, Corbin Burnes will take the mound, trying to bring the Orioles their second mop of the season. Their last one came against the White Sox. This would mean a little bit more as the Rays fall to last place in the American League East. Their run differential is down to negative 62, which is 5th worst in baseball, which is just catastrophically bad. The Rays are not very good. The Rays are not very good right now. The Orioles are. They bounced back after those 2 kind of tough losses in Toronto. They had just showings all across the lineup. 6 different Orioles homer. They got a couple from Santander. Gunnar hit his 20th. Adley hit a grand slam on Sunday. And Kyle Bradish keeps on rolling. They gave him a day of extra rest. And because of the injury situation with him, when they pushed him back, everyone was like, oh, should we be concerned about this? No, quite the opposite, because he was nearly perfect on Saturday. Kyle Bradish has been one of the best pitchers in baseball since he came back. He has not allowed a home run all season. He is leading baseball in batter's face without allowing a home run. Kyle Bradish, why haven't you allowed a homer yet? Because you are very, very, very good and somehow better than last year, even though your elbow was hurting not that long ago. So, the Orioles are great. They're still 2.5 back behind the Yankees. And I think, again, back to the Yankees for a second, this is why getting these guys back is important, because while the Orioles have their injuries too, they're coming. And so the Yankees cannot just hang out at the top of this division, because the Orioles are also one of the best teams in baseball.
The Orioles have a somewhat similar issue roster-wise, where Cedric Mullins has been abysmal, like off hill. He is, in a lot of ways, one of the more important players on the team. Like, he has been there for really long. He's vital to the room, and he can still do a lot of helpful things. Like, he's still great defensively, and he still steals bases. He's a great base runner. And so, even though his OPS plus is 57, he's been a league average value player, which is not someone who should be playing every day. Yeah. But it's still valuable to have a roster. How they handle that, whether they phantom IL him and they give him some time to reset, I don't know. But he's definitely going through it.
Yeah, yeah. And right, it's obviously they've given Kowser some run in center. It's not like they don't have internal outfield options. But it is kind of interesting with him and Hayes too, just what that shakes out. Again, these are generally first world roster problems. But because of Mullins' history with Baltimore, it is definitely something to monitor. The one Rays thing I will say, shouts out to their Pride night. It is Pride Month, of course, and they crush it with this. Now, they had some unfortunate PR a couple years ago because a couple of their not-so-inclusive relievers decided to rip the Pride night patches off their jerseys a couple years ago. As far as I can tell, that did not happen this weekend. And to see Yandy and Randy and I think Taj Bradley wearing some Pride cleats, like, it was just awesome. And some of these teams do this a lot more emphatically than others, but it was very cool to see because it's like, duh, this is what we should be doing in 2024. So shouts out to them for that, even though their performance on the field, not so great right now. All right, Jake. So the Orioles won 3 games. There were 2 other teams that won 3 games over the weekend, the Nationals and the Reds. Let's start with the Nats, who take 3 of 4 over the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves, who win on Thursday and then lose the next 3. Hurston Waldrop makes his major league debut on Sunday, shows a couple nasty splitters. They leave him in a little bit too long. He gives up a big home run to Keibert Ruiz, and they lose 3 of 4 to the Nationals for the second time in 3 weeks. They are now 2-6 against the Nats this year after absolutely dominating them over the last 3 seasons. Here's the thing about the Braves offense. You could say, oh, well, they don't have Acuña anymore. This has been a bottom 3 offense since the end of April. That's a whole month before Acuña went out. It has been a Bad lineup. Bad lineup. Full stop. Not, oh, the bottom of the lineup is bad. Bad lineup. Full stop. Only Ozuna is performing at an all-star level. And at this point, while Olsen has definitely swung it better lately, Riley Harris, Murphy, I know he's coming back from injury, and, you know, Arcia, who was a pretty good hitter for them last year, Albies has been a little bit better. Just, I mean, Riley especially, just dreadful. You know, he's batting second now, and it's just not there. So I don't know who I'm, it's still so much talent to think that it's not going to be able to pick it up. Duvall has not, he's been so awful against right-handed pitching. There are moves to be made for this Atlanta team. I'm sure Anthopoulos is going to do it, but I, man, it's, they're 9 games behind the Phillies. It's the largest division lead in baseball right now the Phillies have. So listen, the best version of the Braves could in theory climb their way back into this, but we just haven't seen that version in a while.
9 games is enormous. I mean, I know there's a lot of runway left here, but that's a ton of games. Like, yeah. I'm skeptical that they're going to be 9 games better than the Phillies over the course of the season based upon what we've seen so far.
Yeah,
like,
it's really hard to think that's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the Braves, I've been like banging the table on what the Braves are is just insanely impressive.
Yeah.
But for all their good hitters to just turn into pumpkins relatively at the same time as wild, like Travis Darno is the second best hitter on the team. And he's a 35-year-old part-time catcher. He's awesome. It's a great player, but that's just a bizarre spot. The pitching has just kept this group afloat. I've been really impressed with their ability to sustain it this deep into the season.
Yeah, but that's the thing is the pitching has been good and they're still losing a lot lately. And so, you know, if for a while it was sustaining them to keep them having one of the best records in baseball. But at this point, they don't have, I mean, they do still have that because they had a big cushion and there aren't that many good teams. So they're still, you know, 7 games over 500, but They just don't look very good. It's really not that complicated, and they're just going to need some of these all-star level players to actually play like it. And where are they going this weekend, Jake? They're going to Baltimore. So, you know, maybe the pitching shows up this week. It's going to have to against this Orioles lineup, but they got the Orioles, Rays, and Tigers coming up over the next 3 series. So just, yeah, again, it's not like they're not going to make the postseason, but there is moves to make, and I feel like this is the team that is going to jump at a trade sooner rather than later. If I'm going to pick one, and this team that's not going to wait until July.
From the Nats' perspective, Nick Senzel, Jesse Winker, go Reds.
Yeah, and by the way, Kaber Ruiz showing signs of life recently, and the Nats pitching has just been, again, like that's why they are competent this year, is because their pitching is so much better. All right, let's go to Cincinnati, where I think they just needed to get rid of me. I moved and they immediately went on a 7-game winning streak. I guess I saw them sweep the Dodgers. That was the last time the last series I was there when I was, you know, living on that side of the state. But they take the first 3 of 4 against the Cubs. They squander the opportunity on Sunday. Imanaga is very good, and the Reds' offense doesn't really show up. But really nice to see Cincinnati get back in the mix. They had that 7-game winning streak. And again, they're getting a little bit healthier. Their pitching, I think, is also fairly underrated at this point. If they can start to see a little bit more signs of life on offense from guys like Jonathan India, TJ Friedl is back, which is nice to see. Steer has, of course, been good. Ellie has went through a really bad stretch and is sort of coming back out of it. Listen, the NL Central right now is hilarious. We have the Cubs, Reds, and Cardinals all 6.5 back of Milwaukee. The Pirates are 7 back. This is just a delightfully messy division. It is basically exactly what I expected it to be, except the Brewers are the team at the top instead of, I mean, I don't know who I expected to be at the top, but the Brewers are the team kind of chilling at the top of this division. But yeah, good for the Reds. They're kind of climbing back in it, and the Cubs kind of struggles continue.
There are 5 teams tied for like 2 spots in the NL wild card, and the NL Central is the main culprit. Unacceptable, evil stuff. I mean, we got back to the spot where I think we maybe believed we would be, except for the Brewers. The Brewers have been way better than we thought, and I think you need to consider them on a different plane now. I've been really disappointed with the Cubs. That's been really tough to watch. But, you know, when we were asking around people, like, which of these mediocre NL teams do you believe in the most? Like, everybody said the Reds, and here they are back in it.
Yep. So the opportunity was there for them to get back in it, and they have done that. All right, a little bit more in the NL Central. After the break, let's take a break. Let's give Jake's voice a rest. I'm honestly impressed with how it's holding up. We'll be right back here on Baseball Barbercast to fly through the rest of the series. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's go through the rest of the series. There are a bunch of them, but we're going to go quickly for Jake's sake. Let's stay in the NL Central with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Pittsburgh Pirates taking 2 of 3 for the Minnesota Twins over the weekend. Of course, they keep the Twins completely scoreless on Friday and Saturday. Mitch Keller was marvelous. A shockingly competent bullpen game on Saturday was another shutout for the Pirates. And then Jared Jones, who was not bad on Sunday, but the Twins managed to get to him. And then just a disastrous 10th inning, 7 runs for the Twins in the top of the 10th on Sunday, salvages a game for the Twins in this series. We've got Skeens in St. Louis on Tuesday. And this is important for Pittsburgh because the Pittsburgh Pirates have yet to play the Cardinals or the Reds this season. Very strange part of the schedule. So a lot of runway for them to kind of make up some ground in the NL Central. And that begins tomorrow with Paul Skeens in St. Louis. We talked about how cool it was to see Skeens pitching Wrigley for the first time. I'm excited to see the casual Cardinals fans have their minds blown by Mr. Skeens on Tuesday. So good series win for Pittsburgh. Rowdy Tellez hit a home run on Saturday and got a curtain call and got rowdy chance. It was extremely cool. I was very happy for him. Another example of fans who have been booing him. We just talked about that. He had his moment, and that was very, very, very cool to see. Sorry, Minnesota. Twin City Connects. I believe the last or almost the last ones because we still have to get the new Dodgers ones, I believe, at some point. But is it true that the Twin City Connects just dropped?
Yes, I put them in the chat.
All right, I'm taking a look. I am opening it up right now. Thumbs up or thumbs down before I open the link? Thumbs up from Jake. Ooh, very interesting. Blue and yellow. Okay, so, oh my God. Okay, what do you think my favorite part is?
Land of 1,000 rakes.
10,000.
10,000
lakes just plastered on the side of the hat is immaculate. This is an interesting one. We have the silhouette of the state, which is something that I'm not sure we've seen that in a City Connect. That smells like State Connect, does it not? Does it not? But we have the star in the middle. Very interesting, very different color. Just a totally big pivot from the colors that we're used to seeing, which I don't think is a bad thing at all.
Jordan, they're not the Minneapolis Twins, okay? State Connect.
That's true.
Baby.
Minnesota's in the name. And yeah, wow. Okay. Lots of process here.
They went with a theme about the lake, right? It's all lake oriented and the colors are blue and yellow. The sun's setting on the lake, the ripple effect of
the Jersey ripple. Yep. Yep. The lakes. Like it's like, hey, we have lakes. And then if you forgot about that they have lakes, then they remind you, hey, in case you look at this lakes. Part of the uniform, you'll be reminded we still have lakes.
They should have had Junior Lake announce these.
Sign Junior Lake for the City Connect. What is Junior Lake? Is he still playing in Mexico?
Sorry. Don't get sidetracked like that. I think that these are great. They look like Rays uniforms, but besides that, they're awesome.
I agree. Junior Lake, 787 OPS in Mexico. Bring him to Minnesota. This lineup could use a jolt, the land of 10,000 Junior Lakes. Good job, Twins. You did a great job with these. Let's move on to the Brewers and the Tigers. Brewers taking 2 of 3 in this one. Listen, I'm just going to move the Brewers to the side. They're a good baseball team. They did what they needed to do this weekend. Tarek Skubal is my AL Cy Young. If the season ends today, I don't even think it's really a question. There are some other great candidates, but he has just been honestly, he's managed to exceed the hype. I would say that I had high expectations for him, and he has just been oh my God, he hit 102 miles an hour on Sunday, and by the way, Reagan's has also been just as good. Not just as good, but like right there. You know, I remember putting out a Twitter poll before the season, you know, who's going to have more F4 this season, Cole Reagan's or Tarek Skubal, because both of them were 1 and 2 in baseball over the last like month and a half last season. And they are 2 and 3 in baseball right now behind. Do you know who number one in pitching F4 is right now, Jake? This is going to be impressive if you can pull this out.
Tanner.
Oh, nice job. Jake's been doing his homework. Yes, Tanner Houck is the number one, Skubal 2, Reagan's 3, Ranger Suarez. Wow, we have 5 lefties, Skubal, Reagan, Suarez, Sale, and Crochet, the next 5 on the F4 leaderboard. But anyway, Tarek Skubal is awesome. Tigers are not awesome, but, you know, Tarek Skubal is, so that's good.
The Giants take two or three from the Rangers. I feel like if the Giants beat the Rangers in a series, they should have Bruce Bochy back.
Oh, they get him back. Oh, interesting.
They get him back.
I don't think Bruce Bochy would want to do that. Even with their struggles, I think I'd rather still be managing the Rangers this year than the Giants. Good news for the Rangers on the injury front. Max Scherzer made a rehab start on Sunday and looks to be coming back soon, which is good because, my gosh, this pitching staff needs all the help it can get right now. And so it will be nice to have Max Scherzer back, the first of what is hoping to be several returns for Rangers famous starting pitchers in the second half. And Heliot Ramos continues to rake for the San Francisco Giants atop that lineup, and a nice series win for them on the road. The Cleveland Guardians taking 2 of 3 from Miami over the weekend. I watched basically none of this series, although I did notice that Brian Rocchio hit his first home run of the season. This is significant because Brian Rocchio has essentially been cosplaying as Miles Straw at shortstop this season for Cleveland, as they have upgraded their offense in other ways in the outfield and all around the roster. But Brian, you know, the guy that they can't hit at all and plays really good defense at an important position, like Miles Straw, that's now Brian Rocchio this year. Now, there's more hope for Brian Rocchio's offense, I think, moving forward. However, so far we have not seen that, but it was nice to see him get his first home run of the season after a lot of barely getting to the warning track.
We have to do Why Haven't You Homered Yet soon.
That's coming. That's coming later this week. The Royals take 2 of 3 over the Seattle Mariners. This was a ridiculous series. They come back from 8-0 on Friday. I mean, that comeback alone kind of probably deserves a lot longer discussion, and I'm not just ignoring it because, you know, I like the Mariners. The Royals are amazing. They are a very, very, very impressive team. They have been one of baseball's best teams at home. The Mariners have been one of the not best teams on the road. So it was a perfect storm for an epic comeback that we saw on Friday. It was a classic, just scored too soon. Mariners put up a ton of runs early, and I was like, they screwed this up. This is not what you need against this Royals team.
Stupid.
Yeah, idiots. What were they thinking? Royals kind of cruise on Saturday, and then on Sunday, the back-and-forth affair, the Royals almost come back again. Mariners hang on for dear life, despite a game-tying homer from MJ Melendez in the bottom of the ninth, and the Mariners squeak out with a victory. George Kirby was absolutely excellent on Sunday. The Mariners go home and get to play the White Sox for 4 games this week. So they are going to have to try and take advantage of those games as they try and maintain their division lead in the American League West, which sits at a very comfortable 5 games. However, Jake, this division is very weird. And the Astros, with a golden opportunity to sweep the Angels on Sunday, decided to take that chance and just flush it down the toilet as Ryan Pressly kind of blows it in the eighth. And then did you see this this walk-off home run for Mr. Logan Ohapi?
No.
All right. Logan Ohapi hits off of Josh Hader, hits a walk-off home run. But the reason this was notable is because Trey Cabbage, playing left field for the Houston Astros for some reason, leaps over the kind of above the very short wall down the left field line in Anaheim. And it appears that the ball is in his glove, but when he comes down, the ball appears to land over the fence. Yes, you are watching it now. Highly unfortunate way for Josh Hader to blow yet another save, but that is the situation that the rest of their team put them in as the Angels take that one on Sunday. And yeah, just a horrible loss for the Astros as they continue to try and crawl their way back in this. They're 30-36. You know, they're again, they have done some work to get back in it. They're 4.5 out of a wild card spot, but it's losses like this that just hurt. Right when you think that they're going to kind of carry that momentum and close out one of the worst teams in baseball in the Angels, they just can't. And really, really bad, just bad stuff. So tough loss there for Houston, but they are still, you know, they're still relevant and their offense is still good.
I mean, again, they're 4.5 back of a wild card spot. They're 6.5 back in the division. No one is good at baseball. Yeah.
So it's good. Okay. So they'll be okay. Last 2-1 series win was the Toronto Blue Jays taking 2 of 3 over Oakland. That's nice. IKF playing super well. I'm very happy for him for all. He is the least of Toronto's issues right now. But we got to talk about what I believe to be is the funniest play of the year. which happened on Sunday. I was a little bit disappointed that you saw this before I could show it to you live on the show. However, here we are. This is the 10th inning. The Blue Jays have taken the lead. Davis Schneider is up with one out and a runner on second base. He pops one up in foul territory. This would be easily in the seats in literally every other ballpark in Major League Baseball. However, not in Oakland, where the foul ground goes forever, which allows Tyler Soderstrom, the first baseman for Oakland, range over, go for the ball, go for the ball, go for the ball, towards the Blue Jays dugout. And as Tyler Soderstrom approaches the dugout, you see one member of the Blue Jays dugout bolt out of the way. He could tell, this is where the ball's coming, I got to get out of the way. But then, as Soderstrom approaches the dugout even more, a different member of the Blue Jays dugout, Yusei Kikuchi in particular, does the exact opposite as Kikuchi stares up into the sky and says, uh-oh, that baseball is coming towards me. I should get out of the way. I'm going to stumble forward and hopefully not run into the fielder that is trying to field. Oh, nope, that's actually the opposite of what happened. As by the time Kikuchi looks up, he realizes he is about to hit Tyler Soderstrom. And by instinct, he kind of lowers his head and shoulder into the funniest accidental truck stick of the season in Major League Baseball. I know this was highly embarrassing for Kikuchi. Fortunately, neither of them were hurt. Kikuchi was very embarrassed afterwards. Fortunately, this play didn't end up mattering and no one was injured. This is so funny. I have watched this play so many times over the last 24 hours, and I look forward to continuing to do it for the rest of my life when I need a pick-me-up.
It's so good, dude. It just looks like a new rule where he was encouraged to run out of the field and legally interfere with the play.
And that just the moment, like, there's also someone else on the Blue Jays bench after the collision who kind of just, like, turns away in both, like, embarrassment.
I believe it's Bassett. I think it was Bassett.
It's so funny. I can't stop watching it. Oh. Anyway, David Schneider was ruled out on obstruction. Tough out for David Schneider, I got to say. I mean, in theory, Tyler Soderstrom would have caught it, but that is an unfortunate way to lower your batting average. All right, those are the 2-1 series wins. Four more series before we say goodbye quickly. London. Mets and Phillies play two games in London. The Phillies cruise on Saturday. Brandon Suarez picks up his MLB leading 10th win of the season. Bryce Harper hits a home run. He slides like he is Mikhail Antonio at the West Ham Stadium after an equalizer.
Amazing.
The funniest part about this is, did you watch it with sounds?
He like screams. He's like, oh.
He screams. And then when he goes back into the dugout, as he's dapping up his teammates, he goes, I love soccer. I love soccer.
Is Bryce Harper in on the bit? Is always a great question. And I think the answer here is, oh, yeah.
The panderer in chief is at it again, folks.
I love soccer.
So funny. I recommend everyone watching that. Anyway.
Quickly on this. Like, us and people listening to this see this and it's like, what a doofus. Yes. However.
It's awesome.
However, like, the number of people who don't actually care about baseball who are going to see this clip is insane and great.
Lovely. Then the Phillies looks like they're going to cruise again on Sunday before Jose Alvarado. This happens with Alvarado probably once every 8 or so outings. You know, the 20 command from his prospect days just comes back in just horrific fashion, just totally scattershot. And the Mets are able to kind of scrape together a comeback, take the lead and hold on for dear life in the bottom half to squeak out a victory there. And yeah, I mean, these games mean a lot more to the Mets than they do to the Phillies, as the Mets are trying to kind of get back in the mix here. And yeah, they managed to get one there. So good for the Mets. They are still a very goofy baseball team capable of losing in embarrassing fashion. But it was nice to see them have some ninth inning luck go their way for once this year, because that has very much not been the case for this team very much. All right, we had three more four-game series, and they were all splits, the Rockies and Cardinals. I did not watch any of this series, but all I know is that if you got the Rockies coming to town for four, we got to win that series. That's a series that if you're trying to make some ground, we're trying to make some progress in these standings, Rockies at home is supposed to be when you win those games. Cardinals have not been able to do that. They do get two, but again, I want to believe. I don't want to give up on this team quite yet, but these are frustrating showings. Chris Bryant is hurt again too, by the way.
Yeah, I know. There was like a whole rant about...
Embarrassing. Yeah. Yeah.
Like about how he's stealing money from the team. They asked him, hey, do you want this money? And he said, yes. The team should be the one receiving the criticism for committing that amount of money to a player. The player should never be the recipient of criticism for accepting money that is offered to them. It's that simple. If you think otherwise, you're a dope.
Yep. Right. And it's like, I don't know why we need to feel like he has to, like, but as you said, they're no one forced the Rockies to give him that money. You know, Chris Bryant earned that with it, with the career that he had. And of course, it's been extremely frustrating how it's gone. And if I'm a Rockies fan, I could be frustrated. I could be disappointed that Chris Bryant has not contributed to more winning in Colorado. Like, that's fine. He's not a, you know, impervious to that, but it's not Chris Bryant's fault. So anyway, that's an obvious point that you could imagine we already feel. The Red Sox split 2 with the White Sox. The White Sox snapped their 14-game losing streak. The Red Sox are the kings of 500. They have been 26-26, 27-27, 28-28, 29-29, 30-30, 31-31, 32-32, and now 33-33. Will they be able to keep up this 500 streak this week as they play the Phillies and Yankees over the next 7 days? I will be impressed. That will be true commitment to the bit if they're able to go 500 against these two teams. The White Sox offense is starting to look a little bit better. Their pitching and defense, not so much. Even in the game where they broke the streak, they are making defensive mistakes that you truly cannot fathom making. But I appreciate it because it's entertaining.
And they're not going to take that from the Red Sox.
No, they're not. Last series, D-backs and Padres. Padres also, again, they lose on Thursday against Arizona. They dominate on Saturday and Sunday, or sorry, on Friday and Saturday. It's like, here we go. Finally, the Padres winning at home. They've struggled at home for some godforsaken reason. And then they fall on their face again on Sunday. Adam Mazur making only a second career major league start. So you can imagine a little bit tough there, but D-backs managed to split the series there. Tatis and Profar have both been unbelievable. Even after our all-star discussion last week, both of them having big weekends again. Tatis has been on a real heater. Profar has been marvelous as well. And I think people are starting to notice that. Padres again, you know, we talk about the NL Central. The NL West is also in that D-backs, Giants, Padres mix, just as challenging to sort through. I really change my mind about those three teams pretty much every day. And it doesn't seem like that's going to change anytime soon. Those were the baseball games this weekend, Jake. Oh, by the way, there were some amazing college baseball games this weekend. We are not going to talk about them. You can hear about that on our other podcast with Stephen Schock. Jake can't talk anymore anyway, so we will spare him. We will spare him that responsibility. Thank you, Jake, for gritting through this. Hopefully it doesn't cost you Wednesday's episode. We will find out. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. Thank you to everyone who listens and rates and reviews the show wherever you listen to your podcast. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. And we will be back on Wednesday, hopefully with a rested and fully competently speaking Jake Mintz. We will find out on Wednesday. Any final words or whispers, Jake Mintz?
This is not the voice of baseball.